Right now, it is time to bring in David Tarachuk. It's time for the Media Beat. Of course, David has his own website, themediabeat.us, and he also has, of course, his commentary that he does with the Huffington Post, and also a PBS television correspondent reporting on ethics and belief, and we welcome him in every Friday morning. Good morning, David.
Well, hello. It's good to be reporting in to you from the media capital of the world, New York City, as ever, or as most of the time, at least.
Very, very worried about the media capital of the world, but that's all right.
You are?
I think that we should create a new media capital of the world, but that would be...
Where do you suggest?
I'm trying
Sharon,
to...
Sharon, Connecticut, perhaps?
Sort of. Yeah. What I'm looking... No, no. But here...
You wouldn't want the sort of people we have here, no.
David, not, we have him.
You've been. Oh, you know what this is like.
Yeah, the number of, especially over a certain part of the week, right?
You think,
I'm well aware of that. It slipped my mind.
But that's just because weird.
But they go to Sharon for peace and quiet.
That's exactly right. That's exactly right. So they're not meeting when they come here.
Yeah. No, I remember thinking, then this was just. Should give you some sense of how foolish I can be, that because I was in a business where everybody sort of migrated to the Hamptons, I thought, I'll come here. I won't know anybody. It will be great. Wrong.
And now you bump over publishers, editors.
Oh, yeah.
Quite a lot. Yeah, sure.
It was another one of those classic decision-making things that... haunt decades later. But here's my question. You raised an interesting point. And last week we were talking about, we were waxing philosophical. And I want you to take your interesting point about who's doing what to whom. And then I want to talk about hypocrisy. So you go first.
Who's doing what to whom? Is that what I talk about?
Yeah, well, you're going to just in terms that there is a sudden I'm not sure that global politics or geopolitical affiliations belong on cable TV, but if they're going to be there, everybody should have some sense of who the different players are. It's almost like a baseball game.
Well, you're expecting knowledge and background and context and basic information, are you, from cable television panels, I think the technical word is, but we know them much better as shouting matches, right? Well, that's not what you get. And I don't think, after 25, maybe 30 years plus of their existence, I think we've learned not to expect that either. But yes, it would be nice, wouldn't it, to have some better grounding in the actual facts of the matter from all these bloviators, to use a time-honored nickname for the people who go on these panels.
And so the question becomes, where do you get, because it's been so long, and I always say this as a sort of caveat, people who, it's the people who now, younger kids, and by younger, I'm pretty much saying people under 40 who need this information, where do they get it?
Well, we turn to our reliable sources as best we can identify them. I know what mine are, and I think you know what you are. It's good to pass them on, maybe, to the people who feel they don't have them. And of course, it will only be those who want them who will go after seeking them. Many people are perfectly content. I'm not going to say happy. I don't know about that. But many people do seem content to... just take what is spoon-fed to them by things like the brawling matches on so-called panels on cable television. We've spoken about this a lot. My sources, my favorite sources, my mostly reliable, but with the caveat from me, of course, that there's no such thing as 100% reliability in the media. We know that they make mistakes repeatedly. not constantly, but repeatedly.
And they're not all intentional.
Oh, I would say the vast majority of them are in completely unintentional. Yeah.
But what's relevant?
And usually belie just the inevitable context or the reasons behind mistakes in our business tend to be the same old ones of rush. The media is under great pressure to be competitive, each source with each outlet with each other, and the sheer competitiveness is often to blame for the errors that do happen. Sometimes it's more systemic than that, and sometimes, you know, quite frankly, you know, we have to admit that sometimes bias does creep in too. Bias of any particular human being who's got the function of preparing a story at any given time. Yeah, but most of the time they're accidents, and it's a particularly accident-prone profession. I mean, it's terribly easy to get things wrong, as we all know, to our cost. I've made some bloopers myself, and sometimes quite serious editorial mistakes that, you know, I'm glad to say I was reprimanded for and I'm not particularly proud of it, but I think it's important to mention that I was taken off the air once by a British television network because I appeared to get something badly wrong. I say appeared because, in fact, it was wrong at the time. It was, or at least it was not sufficiently checked at the time. That's my confession for you. I said something I felt in my bones something to be true, and I had some evidence for saying that it was true. On the other hand, there wasn't enough evidence for us to go on air with it, and I shouldn't have taken that risk. A couple of years later, it was proven that it was true.
Right.
But, you know, at the time, I was professionally in the wrong, and I was properly reprimanded for it. I was taken off the air for a while.
But I want to.
So, you know, good media outlets regulate their professionals, but of course, many others don't. I'll go into the list again, I guess, if we want to be reminded of who the reliable outlets are. For me, it's the New York Times, it's the Financial Times in Britain, it's the Guardian most of the time. But I have to put a bigger caveat these days over the Guardian, because now and again it gets a little sloppy. Their rush, it's not just rush in that case, it's irrelevant what's happening at the Guardian. They have their own troubles now, and a lot of it has been a matter of overexpansion, and now they are kind of sort of trimming their sails a little and getting down to hard tacts. And besides them, of course, there's on the international scene, there's Deutsche Welle from Germany. There's The Economist magazine, which I have my sort of almost aesthetic concerns about their tone, but putting their tone apart, they are pretty solidly research-based, and that's what I'm mostly going for when I turn to an international outlet for the basis of making my weekly or daily judgments about the news.
And that's... It's important that, and I totally understand what you mean about the tone with The Economist, but it requires, once again, a fair amount of devotion that is, you know, devotion to information that people with their busy lives, let's just say, aren't, they don't necessarily have the time to allocate. And
yeah, as a consumers, we don't just consume. I think we do have to be pretty active consumers, rather in the same way that the Consumers Association is always, many consumer advisory groups suggest. You know, you become an active and an engaged consumer, an educated one for a start, and that's how you end up being getting better products, and that the same applies to the media too. If you educate yourself and take the time to do that, and as you say, we're busy and we don't have the time, we may think, but we do. We can make time if we think it's important. And in the case of the media, you end up having an obligation too, also, to look at the unreliable sources now and again, just to get a sense of kind of what you're up against. Check in with Fox News as well. Check in with the New York Post. I do that on a pretty daily basis. Well, perhaps not. Every 2-3 days or so, just to see what sloppy journalism can be like, because that gives you a sense of what good journalism is too.
And that's a very important point. Or the other thing that you can do if you don't have time, or if you're a headline person or whatever, is walk into a pharmacy or someplace that still there are news kiosks still all over the planet, and just cast your eye over the different headlines of, you know, 4 different papers that are there. You will see that it's essentially the same story, but you can get a sense right then and there, just of takes 30 seconds of this, and then you've got to pursue the information. Or when you hear about it, you'll at least know that there are a bunch of sides to it. You alluded to something when you were when you were coming up, and you were once taken off the air for knowing something but not having the
sufficient proof, yeah.
Right? And
my own proof. I could turn to other media sources. In a particular case, I could turn to other media sources and say, well, they're saying it, why can't I? Well, the reason I couldn't is that I didn't have my own self-established proof, and that was the essence of my offense then.
And in internet land, in Blogville, that bit has become very, and that was how creating, let's just say, massive fakery is so easy, because
sure, we have an industry doing it now. All you got to do is reference something else, and it sounds like it's authentic. but that the sounding as if it's authentic is not enough. And of course, in a lot of legacy journalism, if you like, that the habit has grown too, which is not to be encouraged. The weasel words reportedly, and other versions of that same notion. Because it's reported, it somehow gains an extra ounce of strength. Well, you know, it probably does, but we need more than that ounce. We need a lot more. We need double checking and double confirmation to be sure.
Yeah, and that whole sourcing thing. There are also massive legal departments that that work daily, that toil thanklessly, basically. And make sure that you've got.
I don't know many journalists who thank the legal department. That's true, yep. but they're important. I mean, they save our hide every day.
Right, because no one can come up. You know, if you say reportedly or allegedly but it's the same thing that, again, basic AP style book. Even if somebody is standing there, you know, holding the bloodied knife, right, with the blood dripping off it and the this and the that, it's still alleged.
That's true, until proven in a court of law.
Right,
yes, absolutely.
But yeah. These little bits, as I say, if you're above a certain age, and I really apologize for being ageist, I just want to bring this information, I want to basically throw it on the ground so that everybody not in this business understands that you still need to raise these questions internally.
Sure, and double check your facts. I mean, that's a totally given. On the other hand, the totally given is often totally lost as well.
Just in an environment that almost supports it, because
sure, yeah. Again, it's the pell-mell rush, the headlong rush to publish. And that's been behind most of the egregious mistakes or misreporting that have been done by mainstream media in the last, forever, probably. I'm not sure. It seems to many of us that the hectic pace of our business now is unprecedented. I think it probably is. On the other hand, there have been times in the past when competition has been incredibly fierce for stories. And the time frame may be a little different. You know, you like to get your story out an hour before somebody else. Now it's seconds and microseconds, especially if it's business news, by the way. That kind of intensity is, I think, a level higher than we've ever had on a systemic and continuing basis ever before.
All right. Now, speaking of geopolitics, we're going to just jump over because it does appear sudden, and we're going to talk. I think we've got a few minutes left. This is what you raised yesterday, which was basically the U.S. media's sudden discovery that Iran is in Syria. And yeah. The reason...
Yeah. No. There's some... Iran basically has almost annexed Syria.
They've had a bloody nose given to them, yeah. That awful sort of euphemism of the military world by Israel now. And the Israel-Iran conflict that's burst into the open has been a Cold War now for, say, 20, maybe even 30 years, if we want to go back to the Iranian Revolution, which changed everything. Because before that, Iran and Israel were good neighbors. It'd be maybe a little stretch to say that they were allies, but they certainly had good relations. And now, of course, with Iran allegedly, no, we know it's true, aiming missiles at the Golan Heights, which is under Israeli control, and Israel smacking back with a very heavy destruction in large part of much of Iran's presence in Syria, you've got a very, very open case of warfare. And that, of course, is extraordinarily dangerous in the Middle East. The hotbed, as it is, of international geopolitical risk. And that part is new. And it has taken some journalistic outlets totally by surprise, and they've been hop-footing to catch up. Again, you know, we could go back to the same checklist of media outlets we just talked about and be aware that they've been talking about this for some time. They've been reporting on it diligently. These are diligent sources, and of course those are the ones to turn to. But yeah, the majority of the mass media has been struggling to catch up with this big, new, dramatic development.
But the interesting thing that I find about quotes is when generals fight in wars, and I'm pretty sure it's pretty universal against when you're a military high command person, it's the leaders of the countries that make the outrageous remarks. And the remark that came out of Israel was a classic great one Benjamin Netanyahu said, "You started a shower. We will send a flood." I mean,
actually, it was
the foreign minister, maybe
the minister of foreign relations. It could easily have been Netanyahu. That's the kind of oratory many in this cabinet go for these days. Sure, yeah, and that is the talk of military standoff,
but
more than standoff in this case. So outright. Combat.
It is
through the air.
It is a Trumpian statement, though. It really is. It's something that Donald Trump would say, and that's why I almost think it came from Netanyahu, because it's almost like they're brothers from another mother. They really are.
Well, many international leaders at the moment know that the very important audience is an audience of one. In many cases, Netanyahu himself, I think, is at pains to make it clear to Donald Trump that he's definitely an admirer, and imitation is the sincerest form of flattery, we're told, right?
But let's also not forget that Sheldon Adelson, who is very big in Republican politics, made his $30 million.
And big in money possession, too.
And
right?
Just made his $30 million.
And money investment in political parties and political leaders.
Let's be blunt. He just made his $30 million payment to the GOP, whatchamacallit, fundraising for
the PAC, yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And we've got 2 minutes left, and so why don't we just, because I'm feeling cranky this morning, why don't we just
feel as cranky as you like.
Well, why don't we just talk about
target how, whatever you want.
All right.
and spit at it.
Our Secretary of State, former CIA director.
Former CIA director, yes.
Is, you know, is from the Dakotas and is very connected, quietly. It doesn't mean creepily, just people really would do well to understand that there are all sorts of connections in all sorts of places. And the Kochs are very, you know, supportive of him.
Sure. The Koch brothers, who fund an awful lot of the right wing, if you can call it that still, of the Republican Party, are big funders of Pompeo, too. That's true.
And
Mike Pompeo is now having his moment, it would seem. Not just prompted, you know, not just appointed, perhaps surprisingly to many people, to the position of running the CIA, but onward from that, onward and upward from that to Secretary of State. And, of course, being very, very much in the public eye as he goes to North Korea to set up the upcoming Kim and... Kim Jong-un summit, I think we can call it that.
The event that's happening on June 12th.
But in fact, coming up with the freedom of three captured American citizens who are of Korean descent. And, that's always good light for a politician to be bathed in, I think, getting people released from oppressive regimes.
So we will leave it on this happy note.
Thank you. Watch Mr. Pompeo from now on. Yes, that's a happy note to consider.
Thank you very much, David Tereshchuk, The Media Beat.